Welcome back to Russian Roulette, the podcast from the Russia and Eurasia program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. I'm your host, Olga Oleker, here in the CSIS studio with my co-host, Jeff Mankoff.
Hello again.
A few episodes ago, we had a special edition with Ksenia Sobchak, who is running for president of Russia. With the presidential vote in Russia almost upon us, we wanted to share with you a conversation we had with Vitaly Shklyarov. Vitaly is a senior advisor to Sobchak's campaign. He has also worked on campaigns in the United States, specifically Obama for America and the Bernie Sanders campaign. In Russia, he worked with Dmitry Gudkov and Max Katz to organize an effort that fielded over 1,000 independent candidates in Moscow municipal elections in 2016. So he's gone back and forth between Russia and the United States working on campaigns, which gives us this terrific opportunity to ask him how these experiences compare.
So we're going to have a pretty extensive conversation with Vitaly, where we talk about the practice of democracy in the U.S. and Russia, especially, well, when the outcome seems predetermined. We're going to talk about how one actually does a campaign in Russia and the nature of the bigger political movement that Vitaly is trying to build, in part through his work for Ksenia Sobchak. We'll also talk about Vitaly's own history and how his work on American political campaigns eventually led him to Russia.
So let's get started. Vitaly Shklyarov, welcome to Russian Roulette. We're really pleased that you're able to be here with us.
So glad to be here. Thank you so much.
So, Vitaly, having worked on American campaigns and now having worked on several Russian campaigns, what do you think are the key differences between campaigning in the United States and campaigning in Russia? I mean, quick, easy question. We like to start with the basic ones.
Well, Olga, there's quite a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, we should probably start with a culture mentality. So, mm-hmm. you don't have in Russia this political culture of activism, of involvement, of fundraising, of volunteering. You have to think of Russia as a former Soviet Union over seven decades long. Every freedom of speech, every freedom of participation was killed there or not really appreciated, and people went to jail or were repressed for. So, over generation after generation, people didn't develop this sense of political culture, and they are just simply politically not engaged, not involved, and it's unbelievably hard to explain why politics matters, mm-hmm. because government has been always seen as a biggest threat, as an enemy of free people. And someone, the entity who suppresses, who violates the law and put you in prison. So there's no this link, this connection between free elections and prosperity or freedom of speech and better lifestyle or economical wealth. And then you have the big problem of institutions. So like elections is a big farce in Russia, so they all fake, and it's really hard.
If that's the case, I mean, why participate in them at all? I mean, this does seem like kind of a quixotic initiative,
sure.
Right?
Yeah, well, there's two views on this. One is, like you said, why participate? Like, you never win in casino, so like, why even
right.
bother, you know, like. But there's another view, and there's a lot of people who is in line with this point of view, and they say like, well, let's wait until the better times yeah. gonna come, and the system will collapse automatically or by itself. But there's a view, and I strongly, and I'm one of the people who shares these values, who says the democracy is not born out of one election or one election. It's a process. It's like a baby development. So you, no matter what, no matter how you wish, the baby in the womb cannot develop within a month or two. You need this time. And I believe we have a lot of examples in Europe, like Germany, like United States, even longer. So you have this time that any society needs to develop, and especially in this modern world. And I don't believe that with a change of Putin, or let's say with a change of the whole government, something going to change there drastically. Mm-hmm. You have to change people's minds. You have to change people's view of life and how they see most basic things like job, responsibility, initiative, you know, like enterprises. And I believe the sooner we start to work on it, and every campaign, every one election, every one cause is like little step towards this direction. So I'm working on this.
Now, there's different views about how to do that, I suppose. Like one would be kind of the start at the top approach, which it seems is where you are right now.
Well, he started with municipal
actually at
elections.
The bottom. Yeah.
Well, okay.
Actually at the bottom.
So would you address that issue of whether it makes more sense to focus on kind of the presidential elections or kind of the lower level grassroots?
Well, we've all seen a lot of attempts to change the politics from the top. And especially in Russia, we all see it didn't work. You know, it didn't work peacefully. It didn't work violently with protests and the Navalny movement. I don't believe the system is to change from a top down, because this machine, this political system is like a perfect created monster. It's just like really well oiled machine to do one thing, to keep the power. So if you have a gun, you cannot like battle, you can't battle if you're insane against a tank, you know, but you're not going to win ultimately. So what do you need to do? You have to find like wind and sun and water make even the hardest stone, you know, like break. So you have in this, like David and Goliath, you have to find something how to battle the system differently. So you can play against Kremlin by their rules, because you're going to always lose. The government has the most power financially in media. The government has the monopoly for military and police force. So it's hard to win regular way. What you have to do, you have to start down. That's what we did last year with municipal level election, winning 267 seats. And I believe that's how you get from grassroots, from bottom up. And if you're going to replace, let's say, Putin with Ivanov, Navalny, or Petrov, or whoever you want, it's not going to change the system, because the rest, the roots are like really rotten.
Replace him with Sobchak.
Even if you replace with Sobchak, it's gonna be still you have even if you replace the system with Sobchak, you still have to work. It's like carvetting your tooth. You can like make a nice looking filling, but the root canal treatment, it needs to be done. That's where the system is failing. I believe the system is failing outside of Moscow, outside of like big cities, because that's where the whole like political system collapses, and the corruption and bureaucracy like really exists in the full beauty.
I want to take a step back. What made you decide to go and start working on campaigns in Russia after having spent time doing that here? At what point did you think that this was a good idea, that this was something you could contribute to? How did this happen?
Well, I just saw that the campaigns are done differently there. There's, as I said, there's no culture, political culture as such. You had those 70 years of Soviet time. Nobody really cared about your opinion, and you just had one single communist party. Then you had this 26 years of new history of Russia where nobody really cared about the quality of candidates, because it was easier to bribe to give a electorate a bottle of alcohol and get the vote for rather than to run a real election. So all this and the policy of Putin created all this vacuum, all this farce system that doesn't work the way it is right now. So it was obvious for me, because I've been working in American politics for many years, and I saw how to apply the grassroots tactics, field operations, and digital strategy to Russia, because it's obvious if you come from a developed country to the third world country, it's obvious for you how to do plumbing the new way, or like create roads the new way.
And people who do that on the development side, who come from the developed world to the developing world thinking, I know how to fix all the things, often hit brick walls because that's not how it works.
Yeah, I mean, that gets back to institutions.
Well, yeah.
Right. You can have the right pipes, as it were, but if you don't have the right framework in place in order to put in the new pipes, you don't have the buy-in from the people living there that thinking that they need new pipes, you're not going to get it.
That's correct. That's correct. And that's why I see the election in Russia not as a like winning or losing a seat, more as a educational process, talking to people, educate them why it matters, why it's important. And then to come back to your question, I believe what comes in play here is my personal experience. So I am at home in three different like, if you wish, continents or cultures. It's one is Eastern Europe, because I was born there. I was born in Belarus. I was growing up in Ukraine, in Belarus, in Russia at the same time. So I'm at home there. But then I spent almost 15 years studying, working on my PhD in Germany, in Europe. So I'm in Europe at home and speak many languages. And now I call last 7 years America my home. And I believe that helps me, or put me in a unique position to translate what to speak the language, not like literally to speak the language, but like translate what it means to get politically active. So what I've seen a lot, a strategy of political consultants from America, just going to Europe, just going to Ukraine, just going to Russia, copy-paste strategies from, let's say, Obama campaign, yes, we can, and failing. Because you cannot just copy-paste just particular strategies to different countries, because the mentality is different. The way people feel and engage or get engaged are different. The people understand politics or translate politics for themselves differently. So this helped me, or put me a little bit in my unique position with all this experience, being able to translate what does it mean American field program, like knocking on doors in Russia, because you don't have residential areas, you have like big houses, you know, like, so you have to recreate it a little bit, like, or adapt. And that's what I've been working on, adapting basically.
So how do you do that? I mean, how do you do the kind of get out the vote work that a typical campaign would do, you know, given some of the challenges that exist in Russia?
Well, believe it or not, it works. It works. We did a huge GOTV campaign last municipal election, sending 3,500 people on the street of Moscow and like knocking millions of doors, not millions, but hundred thousands of doors.
I mean, it's easier in apartment complex. Just go down the hall.
In some ways, yes. Yeah. In other ways, not. So you have, you know, some upsides and downsides. Here you have a lot of tools, you have data, you have water files, you have NGPWAN and all these big data tools to use it and to target. Over there, you have to know there's no data existent. Right. So you have, I was the first one who was starting to build the databases and to track the GOTV efforts, the field programs, and to create a little database for Moscow first. Now, within presidential campaign with Ksenia Sobchak, we're building this in the size of a country. But this is like little steps. It's like baby steps. We're like, Russians are learning to run right now. Not even to run, to walk. They're like literally like walking, learning to walk. So we are over there far away from being at the college or being at school. So it's a process. And if you see the process the way I see it, as a long term, not just like winning or losing the seat and then the job is done. So I really see it as a long term development. So if I put to myself on a timeline 20 years, like within 20 years, it's a doable goal. Mm-hmm. You know, within 3-4 years on one election campaign, it's not possible.
What will you have in 20 years?
I believe, look, last year there was just one, believe it or not, just one elected independent. So not from a United Russia, not from Kremlin Party, one independent elected district in the whole Russia. It's unbelievable. We won one single district. Last year, we won 267 seats and dozens of districts. So now imagine if we take this power, those already 267 elected officials, maybe some of them gonna drop off and not gonna make it to the next 4 years and to the next term. So if I build on this to the next election, I'll have a crowd of people with experience and I send them, let's say, to the parliament or we'll build on the infrastructure and get not 1,000 campaigns at the same time, but maybe 1,000 campaigns in every big city. You know, like, so I believe in 20 years you can build a critical mass of people that not gonna like violently overturn the government, but they will create a political alternative in parliament, a coalition, or a different type of politician, different generation of politician. Then guess what happens? As soon as you give a person opportunity to choose between a corrupt a police officer or not corrupt, once they know how it feels like not being corrupt and being treated normally, they will never go back. They will never. We know it from Georgia. They will never go back. So, and that's the case. I'm trying to create a situation where people gonna just freely choose the better way of living.
So I was going to ask, you know, we had Ksenia Sobchak on the podcast recently, and she acknowledged that it's, let's say, highly unlikely that she's going to actually win. So that being the case, I mean, how do you define success in this election campaign? How will you know if you're making steps towards the goal that you laid out for 20 years from now?
You mean from the presidential campaign specifically?
Yeah, from this campaign.
Well, the definition of success in the United States is winning by points, like 4 points, 3 points, and so on. In Russia, in this political desert, in this political environment where you have no competition, where you have just one candidate on one aisle and pretty much like another candidate on another aisle and nothing else, I believe any type of activity, any type of political activism is success. So is it successful to win one seat out of 450 members of parliament? Yes, it is. Can you change the system just with one vote in the whole parliament? No, you can't. But you know, it's we all trying to see, or like, this is a human nature to want to get results really quickly. I believe we should be prepared in terms of Russia. It's going to take a while. It's going to take a while for change there because there's still Putin. And it's going to take a while even for opposition to be as powerful. Unless, like Ksenia said, unless we build with her campaign a platform, then we can where we can run a lot of municipal level campaigns like coming up in St. Petersburg, like we did in Moscow, then coming up election for parliament. And we create a new power within political field in Russia that the president, the current president that we so much wish to leave, gonna have confidence in these people to like get a little bit easier on politics. Because what she mentioned before, what she says a lot, I believe the problem is not only you don't have a lot of young independent candidates there or like young independent politicians, but also the fear from Putin to just drop the mic, just drop the ball, because he gonna be like prosecuted or like killed or whatever. So I believe he has paranoia that if he leaves the power, there's nobody there who can like maintain it.
You don't think he has also a network of obligations that make it very difficult for him to hand over power to a bunch of Democrats who want to wipe out corruption into the future?
I believe deep down, I don't know this gentleman, but I believe deep down he has this idea of strong Russia. And I believe deep down, and I see it, it's not that Russia is like really absolutely a fail case. So if you get to Moscow, you'll see stuff happening. Like that you see in some areas, the e-government is happening.
Moscow looks great. I mean, Moscow is a very effective city in many ways.
Well, I wouldn't.
They do a lot better at clearing the snow than DC does, although they have a lot more experience.
Apparently the snow clearing, right? The story was that people were writing Navalny and colors on their snow to get it cleared off.
So stuff happens. The question is, it's not effective enough. It's too expensive and it's too bureaucratic. What I believe, maybe it's just my belief, but I believe if there were a power, if there were a force that would be independent, not like corrupt, not bureaucratic, I believe deep down this gentleman might be, otherwise I cannot explain his desire about Ukraine and about strong Russia. Deep down, he wants the prosperity for the country. So at this at some point, he's going to be having a choice, like to die in this office and maybe like Gaddafi scenario or whatever can happen, or like revolution or bloody streets. Or
Brezhnev
find,
scenario.
Yeah, Brezhnev scenario, number two, or find or create himself, or maybe find a political power, a force of young politicians or young political forces that can be like taking place instead of him and can like work hard for Russia. And I believe with Gudkov, with Ksenia Sobchak, with Katz, with a couple of more, with Ryzhkov, there's a bunch of like 30, 40 years old politicians who can be like this, but there has to be a lot of more. And I believe his desire to place right now the governors, like young governors or like technocrats, you know, like in the government, this is exactly the desire to find fresh blood, like fresh faces, like not those like 60 years old, totally corrupt oligarchs in the government, but like renew. Because on the end of the day, I believe he wants to quit, but he can't, I believe. Hmm. He is trapped.
So I want to go back to campaigning. I mean, I think this is very interesting, but I also think we could go on in circles on whether Putin really wants to leave or will be able to.
Maybe not, but at least, Olga, I believe at least, so we have two options or three options. We can sit and wait. Like until biology does the work, you know, like, and he is away, but he's like physically, and we all know and see from pictures.
No,
in a good condition.
I hear you. I just don't.
We can like go on the streets and repeat the revolutionary scenario. I believe it's not gonna work because all Russians are damn tired and frustrated and unbelievably afraid of any revolution, because this country has had
a few revolutions.
Yes. Yeah. And collapses and you know, overturning the regime. So if you poll the world change, it's unbelievably negative in Russian society. If you poll like we want to change, it doesn't work. It's not
change.
Here. Mm-hmm. Or you create a peaceful, peacefully assert center of power. Like you have Kremlin, you have all these Zhirinovsky, Zhuganovs that dying away, and there's vacuum. So what I'm trying to convince people about is to create a third center of power, young, motivated, who is like open-minded, who is pro-West, pro-America, but also like totally focused on effectiveness and on new technology, on new government, and new approach in a mindset. First of all, but also in the way they govern, and I believe that could be a possible scenario.
So question for you on how you run these people. So there are techniques, there are approaches that tend to work in the United States. There's a or not, right? As our most recent election show, Americans get fed up with being fed the same things over and over again,
yeah.
Too. How would you compare what works in America to what works in Russia in your experience?
Apparently, change you can believe in is not a slogan that's going to work
no,
in Russia.
No, change is really hard to believe in in Russia. you know, I believe this fatigue, this sense of, I don't know, like disappointment, it's not just typical for Russia and America right now. I believe it's worldwide kind of a trend, partly because of technological development and ability of people to get as quick as possible, as much as possible information. Certainly because of a growing wave of globalism or anti-globalism as a result of globalism and of populism as well. So people are truly, I agree with you, like looking for new faces, new slogans, not just for the sake of slogans, but like for new type of politicians. And this is exactly my song, what I'm singing. I'm trying with this, what I call the first political Uber or first political incubator, what we did in Russia, running 1,000 campaigns simultaneously and sending 1,000 first-time candidates in a race. It's a new approach. I don't believe anymore in this 20th century type of politics of building a party. Why does DNC have to decide about or collect all the money in the United mm-hmm. States and then split it up the way they want or the way the chair of party chair in some county decides. Why not leave it up to people to fundraise, particularly
candidate by candidate case?
Why do we have, in order to join politics, why do we have this Bohemian club? You know, like you can. Up to these days, you can join politics just in two ways: partisanship, so party affiliation, or big money. Mm-hmm. So, what if we like Uber did with taxes, or like iTunes did with distribution of music? Why if we lower this verge, this entry point? Uh-huh. What if we make the politics accessible? Mm-hmm. You don't have to have 10 years experience in Democratic Party and Republican Party in order to be nominated. Okay. What if 18 years old gentlemen mm-hmm. just want to run, and why can't he run?
I mean, we could have a really interesting discussion about political theory here and the role that political parties play, right? But part of the reason that they exist is that they aggregate diverse views into a coherent platform, so that if you have a totally decentralized approach, right, where you've got hundreds and hundreds of candidates who are nominated locally responding to individual concerns in each district, you put all of them together into a parliament, how do you get
anything
done? Well,
guess what's going to happen? The desire to build coalition is going to grow. The desire to compromise is going to grow. This partisanship, this old problem of gridlock, political gridlock, what we know from United States so vividly, going to disappear because the issue is going to have priority, not the partisanship. This is the problem of modern politics, not just in the United States, but also around the world, that people are united not based on issues, but like, if you align with a party or not. The fresh example of Bernie Sanders running on the end of the day on Democratic ticket, but as an independent candidate, you cannot run in America.
But so in Russia, the two groups you've been affiliated with, or your candidates yeah. have been affiliated with, so Ksenia Sobchak is running as a candidate of the Civil Initiative Party, which is a political party, and the municipal elections, that was the United Democrats, which is sort of a party, sort of not. Do you want to talk a little bit about yeah. this and how you see that evolving?
It wasn't actually a party. It was just a platform. Mm-hmm. We said, look, the deal is really simple. So we want to help you to run. We, unlike regular party or like party in the old school way, we were sitting there and waiting for people to arrive. We like big companies like Google, like Facebook, we looked for candidates, we recruited candidates, we trained them, we chose the best, and from 3,500 candidates that we acquired.
The best on what basis? I mean, how do you?
Well, particularly in this scenario, in Russian case, we set up just three main criterias: anti-Putin, Crimea War, and anti-Stalinism. So that was for us politically enough to say, the rest we're going to teach you. The rest we're going to do for you. But we want you.
But these are municipal elections. So and these,
I know.
These are big national issues that you're running
you
municipal
got it.
Candidates
on. This is a good
on?
Point. So, well, in order to run a campaign in Russia, you have to be a little bit creative because if you get out there with a big slogans, we are anti-Putin and blah, 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 you're going to get like hits back really right away. So what we tried to do, we tried to camouflage. We said like, okay, it's a municipal election.
So these were your litmus tests, but that wasn't really how you were running the candidates.
No, but we tried to camouflage a little bit the political mm-hmm. agenda and by making it look like a municipal level, like boring election. And that's how we trapped a little bit or tricked a little bit the government, the Kremlin, by running tons of candidates, like getting them all registered and running campaigns. But in real, on the end of the day, when they all won, I've been always saying this is actually a political statement. It's not just 267 won seats in the center of Moscow, in the center of Russia, but it's also a political statement because all those candidates were running against Putin, against Crimea War, against Stalinism. So it's a message. It's
but
a message to the government.
They were also running on social services and yeah. traffic.
Absolutely, they were. There were a lot of different issues. At this point, it is not really important which issues. The main desire of person who is the youngest was 18, the oldest 82, is the desire to change, to do something. Mm-hmm. You know, not to stay away and not to accept the status quo and just the way the things are.
See, again, I think this gets to the issue of political parties. Yeah. I mean, at a municipal level, yeah, obviously the main issues are things like who's going to get my snow cleared, who's going to fill in the potholes in the streets. But once you're starting to aggregate and have a nationwide movement, there has to be some kind of common vision that people are going to unite around if you actually want to legislate
well,
or get anything done.
And that's exactly what they started with.
Said, yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, being opposed to Putin is not really – that's a great strategy for an opposition. That's not a great strategy for a movement that wants to govern.
Sure, but look, within those 267 elected officials now, they built like groups, they built coalitions about, I don't know, like environmental issues mm-hmm. or whatever. So my point is the other one. It's not that I'm ahead of a time, like a party, like a classical party of 20th century, like say like those are our issues. If you align with, you can join our party. If not, by my way or highway. No, I said like, I don't care. I don't have, my platform is flat. There's no hierarchy. This is a flat platform. I'm just helping you guys to run, to get elected. I want you to work. That's all. And I'm helping you. I'm helping you to do so. And you define while you're doing this job, while you debating in parliament later, you defining your values and you build coalitions and maybe you build yourself parties. But I take away this filter right away because guess what happens? If you put this filter in front of every single person, it's like a wall. You say like, well, I can support you, but you have to do this and this and this. You have to fundraise. You have to align with those issues or these views. You have to do this. You have to be a member of the party. This scares people away. And I believe for 21st century, in order to drive a taxi, you don't need to know like it used to be 500 streets by heart. In downtown Manhattan, you just need an app and car, and you can be an Uber driver. You don't need those all things. In order to become a superstar, you don't need a big record company. You just need iTunes and creative ideas, and you can be distributed the same way like Michael Jackson at the same time, being being nobody or no name. So I believe this digital way of revolution, this digital distribution should be working in politics the same way it works iTunes, Uber, or Kayak by buying tickets. Why not?
Though I would point out that both Uber and the new model for distributing music has left taxi drivers and musicians poorer.
Mm-hmm. In a way, yes.
And it also doesn't require them to all come together for collective action.
No, but they make less money.
Yeah.
They have a harder time making ends meet. Your song can go viral, and lots of people are listening to it, but you've got no cash as a result.
Right. Yes, but we had the same types of talks, if you guys remember, at 80s, vinyl versus the first CD. Oh, it's going to kill the music industry. CD versus MP3. Oh, it's going to kill the music industry.
Well, I think MP3s may
kind
have.
Of
I believe this is the natural way of evolution. This is. I'm sorry about unions. Yes, the taxi union suffers. But we user gain quality. The taxi rides are cheaper. We all drive more taxi. The quality of drivers are better, safer, and so on. I believe so many jobs are created for people who were just sitting at home. Mm. So, I mean, we lose on one end, but we also gain on the other hand. And I believe this unbelievably old-fashioned industry like politics should be recreated, reinvented itself.
Okay, so what is the role of the Civil Initiative Party in all of this, which is running Sobchak?
Well, two main reasons. Long-term, of course, I was looking, and with Ksenia, we were looking for a platform to keep going after March 18th, after the election is mm-hmm. over, to have a platform, a movement where we can pretty much the same way open the doors to anybody who wants to run. We're going to fundraise. We're going to use our knowledge, the campaign, like we did for free for every first-time candidate in the municipal level election. We did it all for free for them. You know, they were just asked one thing, to run and to do the job, knock doors and go in and talk to their constituency. So the same way we want to open a platform for people to run for governor, for people to run for Duma, for parliament. And then once we have one or two or three or five or maybe 15 seats in parliament, then we don't need to collect signatures and stuff like that. So we want a liberation of political market. We want to open door for everybody to run. it's a pity. It's unheard that in 21st century, in 2018, in order to run, you have to please Zhuganov or Zhirinovsky, some 70 years old dude that's sitting there for 50 years. This is insane. So we just want to have platform for everybody to run, for young people to have a platform. And secondly, for the presidential campaign, of course, get rid of this rule of collecting 300,000 mm-hmm, signatures right. And make our job a little bit easier, which helped us to get just 100,000 signatures.
Can you say a little bit about the attitude of the government towards the party, the initiative, the campaign? Are you worried about being arrested and having some kind of a crackdown, just about in general the way that the government may respond if it sees what you're doing as a threat?
Well, on the one hand, I am worried, but at the same time, look, I'm still alive. Like, I'm a little bit of a fatalist. Like, nothing gonna happen to me if nothing gonna happen. But at the same time, yes, we face some arrests there. Some cars of our volunteers are burned, or like some campaign activities are really hard to get through. Like to rent an apartment or office or like a town hall. Allocation because the government's trying always to control you, to spy on you. So it is hard. At the same time, the government is like a big Titanic. It's really hard to maneuver, and we are like a little boat. We can, like, if we see that we steer towards a cliff, so we can turn around really quick. So that's why I think I don't care like how powerful the government is. As soon as you play your game and not the play of government, because you cannot win this government. It's too big, it's too powerful. If you play your game, and by your game, I mean like technology, digital, really mobilizing people, talking to people, because all those people are old school. They don't talk to people on the street. And we do a lot of events. With Gudkov last year, within 4 weeks, guys, we did 254 events. 254 events, 5 events every single day. 7 days a week, and 4 weeks in a row. So once you play this type of a game, they are not fast enough to keep up with you. So and that's how you win. So you just have to recreate some old strategies in a new fashion way in Russia. That's how it works. But am I concerned? A little bit, yes. But you know, I'm more concerned about Russian-American relations right now, because mm-hmm. that makes everything way harder than the government in Russia.
So on that point, whose idea was it to bring Ksenia Sobchak to America?
It was kind of a mutual idea. On the one hand, I've been, I'm like American dude there. Mm-hmm. I'm really this American guy who not only helps to run campaigns American way, but also who is sort of a connection to for Russian politics in America. So I was always seeing this as one important vector of our relationship and our campaign. And I believe, especially right now in this time when none of Russian elected officials or like just few of them visiting the United States, it's really important to send a different signal and to come as a presidential candidate to America and send a signal, a message of friendship and peace and maybe like time after Putin being defined differently than it is right now. But at the same time, we had a couple of invitations to meet elected officials here. We still have, believe it or not, almost, if I'm not mistaken, over 2 million Russians here, sure. Like living in whole United States, yeah. But mostly LA, New York, Florida, who are eligible to vote. And by the way, I believe voting abroad, like Americans abroad, mm-hmm. We have that type yeah. of organizations. Voting abroad, I believe always, the vote abroad was always against Putin, mm-hmm. always. I believe the only exception it was Israel, where the Yabloko party lost once, but most of the time Yabloko was winning all the votes. It's ridiculous. So we're building on this as well.
Maybe they should run for the Knesset.
Seriously.
Well, no, they shouldn't run for the Knesset, is they? Yeah. Yabloko loses in Israel, right?
Or is it they lost once?
Yeah.
They lost once, but everywhere else they win is the.
So there's a.
So they should run for the Congress. Yeah. They should run for.
I was saying because there's like a million Russian Jews in Israel. They might have a chance.
So of course it's. Partly my idea, partly the desire of candidate to send a message to American people, but also to the Russian electorate, because you have to see that not only Russia is toxic in the United States is toxic in Russia. So everybody who touches this topic, and especially during the last weeks of campaign, travels to America, this is kind of a brave move. So, and I believe this is partly what Ksenia tries to do as well. So to send a message to the people, you have to be brave right now. You have to be fearless in order to want to change, and in order this change to happen. And I believe,
so brave she went to Grozny and Washington.
Well,
I would rather go dangerous for a Russian politician
five times to Washington once to Grozny. But she's also a tough person on the one hand. On the other hand, I believe we also set up this trip to Grozny in a way that it is still possible that something going to happen there, but it's hard something to happen to just women. So we sent just women there. Mm-hmm. So as soon as you have in this group of people one man, the probability of action is...
But they did get attacked.
Yeah, they did. They did. But physically nothing happened to them. But, well, yes. But just imagine you would travel to Texas or Connecticut and like you would feel isolated and in danger, like people... travel, like people feel by traveling to Grozny, is part of Russia. This is ridiculous. And this is also a message that we're trying, with all these actions, we're trying to send a message. We're going to Washington, we're going to Grozny. So we're going to multiple places, just and particularly hot, like button hot issues places, just to send a message, people. This is normal. Like we're living in this particular country right now. But this is not okay that we are afraid to go to Grozny. Why? This is not okay that a woman can be running for presidency. Why? Why are you all so upset about? Why it's not okay to have LGBT rights, or speaking out loud about it? So we are trying to push all these buttons. It's painful, yes. It's not always smart in terms of strategy, but in the long term, it's smart, or it's healthy for the cause and for the Russian future. Because as by alcoholism, if you admit to your problem, if you name it, you're almost healed, you know. So, and I believe, going back to your questions, why we're going to Washington, we want a healing. We want to heal.
Well, and I suppose if your expectation is not that you're going to win the election, then in some ways you're more free to do these kind of things and not worry about the short-term electoral consequences.
Yes, yes. But I mean, you still, as a candidate especially, you want it or not, you wish to have a better result. And if you agree to action that actually harms your campaign in terms of numbers, then you have to have a reason for. And I believe, I really appreciate, and I've seen a lot of candidates, I've been working for a lot of candidates, and that's why I appreciate her approach for this curing, healing the system in the long run, not just like just by winning better percentage right now.
So is it more fun to work on election campaigns in the United States or Russia?
Do you know what? From one perspective, so much more fun in Russia, because it's so much more that dynamic. It's so much like this pioneering work, you know, like where you get, you know, like your sleeves up and you get your hands really dirty, and it's more action. But then also more tiring, because here for presidential campaign you have unlimited time, 2 years, you can run, you can build, you can test a lot, you can do try a lot of technologies. But over there you just have roughly, so we got our registration last Friday, so like six weeks, go run a campaign in 6 weeks in that size of a country. So it's just the dynamics are like, it's like a startup. You start, but then you have to scale so rapidly and get so high up the speed and then perform at this level a long time and then drop right away. Mm-hmm. So it's just different dynamic. And from this point of view, for type of personality who loves it, who loves action, who is entrepreneurial, it's really fun. But it's also like you exhausted. You like really afterwards, you need therapy.
So you mentioned that Ksenia Sobchak was allowed to register for the campaign, which of course is different from what happened to the other main opposition candidate, Alexei Navalny. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about why you think that was the case, and also just sort of your and the campaign's views of Navalny as an opposition figure?
Well, first and foremost, I have unbelievable respect. What he does, what Alexei Navalny does, is just admirable. Especially, I have unbelievable respect, and I really appreciate. I just can't imagine how his wife can manage it to have a husband like that, having two kids, and him being arrested and stuff like that. So it's really admirable what he does. The flip side of the whole opposition movement in Russia is that in the course of the last years, the opposition movement got sort of like stuck in this paradigm, in this tunnel view, if you want. They don't really develop. I believe, and this is what I will write about in next week in one of my articles. I believe with the change of the government of Putin, of this regime, the change of opposition should happen as well, because I believe those people are too long in the same environment, and they kind of like got stuck a little bit. There's a part of a gridlock, not like in America, Democratic and Republican side, but gridlock, Kremlin and opposition. What I mean by that, and this where I a little bit, I'm a little bit critical about Navalny's work. I believe the aim of the work is just a little bit more, or got a little bit more radical. So I believe there's a lot of people in Russia who wants a change, who is tired of non-functional government, who is tired of Putin, of all these 18 years. But there's a lot of people like me who is willing to fight for, who is willing to help, who is willing to fundraise or donate or do something, but who is not willing go on the street and get in prison. So like if I have a kid to get like in prison for 2 days or for 10 days, it's a big problem for me, for my job. And I see more and more people like that, but I don't see on Alexei's side a desire to expand this message, to expand his work aside of this radical protest movement. With his, in my opinion, with his unlimited, as of right now, unlimited media power he has, unbelievable amount of finances he's getting for his NGO, it should have been, in the meantime, in all those 6 years, a huge infrastructure, not just one Navalny. I'm always saying like thousands of Navalny, because you can always kill one, like Nemtsov. You can always put one person behind the bars like Navalny. But if he had, like in every big city, five activists running for office, infrastructures, like maybe a party or like party-like structure, and thousands of people, and not just one particular Alexei Navalny, who is vulnerable as a movement. Like we've seen it many times. He's in prison for 10 days, and the whole NGO is sort of that. Nothing happens. So I am against, in this sense, of this autocratic oppositional model of building the movement. So I'm for creating an open platform for everybody to run with the same set of skills, but tools and opportunities and money.
It's the blockchain model.
It's a blockchain model, distributive model. Perfect, yeah. Distributive model. So that's exactly the point. And we did it the same way with Bernie last year. It was so perfect. Mm-hmm. You don't have in every state an office. We had a distributive team.
But you weren't running a bunch of different candidates.
Yes, so I know. That's... I know what I'm saying. I believe. If this is my critic point of the way the Navalny set up his campaign and his activities, he makes it easy for the government. He makes it easy for Kremlin to fight against him. And why? This is my legitimate question. Why? You can make it hard for them. Why don't you do it? Because it's always easy to put you behind the bars, because it's going to create a media, you know, like attention, and that's how it appears to me that that's what he wants, to have this constantly media attention, but on the end of the day, just Navalny there. You know, like he has so many people around him already since years who could have been running for office. he could have been supporting this municipal election campaign. He didn't, you know. So there's a lot of controversy about the way he does. I understand that he's a politician in his desire to be in the center of attention and being number one, or like a representative, as so many people say, of democratic opposition in Russia. But that's not how democracy works, in my opinion. So, and that's why I don't share a lot, like so many liberal candidates in liberal Russia don't like me in my views, because I'm against this type of opposition. I believe you should open doors for everybody to run and to be able to enjoy the fruits of whatever you created. And he has created a lot, you have to admit.
Vitaly, how do you see political change in Russia affecting U.S.-Russian relations?
It's a tough one. What I see right now, and it's a pity that we are living in sort of Cold War 2.0 and sort of in a new reality and a new world of Russian-American relationship. And I fully understand that it's there've been a lot of on the American side. It's been a lot of reasons not to trust Russians since probably Truman Doctrine or after World War II, and especially in the last couple of years because of meddling in the elections.
I think it goes back even further than that.
Yeah.
Jeff's an historian.
but the same way, I believe on the Russian side, it's been reasons not to trust and not to engage more, or maybe like to get more isolated. But with all what I do, it's not just, and maybe this is like the hidden reason of my activities in Russia as well, and not just like winning elections. I'm not just a political junkie, but I really wish, because also from personal point of view, because my family is divided, like my wife and my kid are living here, Americans, and are Americans, and my mom, dad, and my whole family, my previous life is there, and I've been visiting them on, and I see how much this country needs a change, but I see at the same time how much America needs Russia and how much Russia needs America, because the whole foreign policy was shaped all decades long with this balance of powers, like in a good and a bad way, but it's been always there, and I believe this balance is not there anymore, and I wish and I would love to work on it, and this is my big goal, to help this Russian-American relationship to reestablish, to get to the new stage of understanding of 2018 level of discussion and diplomacy, and not to the 70s.
And you think that candidates that are against Putin, that are for more civil liberties in Russia, are going to facilitate better U.S.-Russia relations when they reach power? When they
reach power, but also with a little change. Every step is a little change. Every step is a little change. And I just want to send this message with every work I do, with the candidate I work and come to visit to DC, that Russia is not Putin. Putin's come and go, you know, but Russian people are going to stay for decades to go. And I believe we should see U.S.-Russia relationship through this type of glasses, and not like through like little conflicts that we have, and we do have a lot of them, but I mean, that's not the 21st century politics, you know, like when in a time when one particular computer virus can like I don't know, like turn down the whole city electricity and cause so much more damage on the stock exchange or whatever. We're like worried about some rockets. Like, seriously, guys, I believe the diplomacy should upgrade as well. So, I mean, they should be like in a family where when you fight with your wife or with your husband, someone has to first say, I'm sorry, and move on. Otherwise, you're not going to be speaking for a couple of days. So I believe, I wish America or Russia, someone gonna do the first step and like say, okay, come on, let's move on, you know. And that's what I'm working on as much as I can from a side right now, from a Russian side, trying to show the different face of Russia, different political face of Russia, and the different future to go in Russia. But I also hope that the American side gonna help with that and appreciate it, and also help us to to run those type of elections or see those type of candidates as the messengers for the future of Russia, for the future of Russian-American relationship.
Vitaly, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me here.
That's it for our show today. If you want to read more about Vitaly, there are some links in the show notes.
And if you haven't done so already, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, where you can also leave us a rating and a review. If you don't use iTunes, you can check us out on Google Play or SoundCloud.
And finally, don't forget to send in mailbag questions to rep@csis.org with the words Russian Roulette in the subject line. We are overdue for a mailbag. We will do one soon, we promise. So send us questions and maybe yours will be the question answered.
Or one of many. Also, if you haven't done so already, follow us on Twitter. The program is at CSIS Russia. Olya is at Olya Oliker, and I'm at Dr. J. Mankov.
And finally, as always, big thanks to everybody who works so hard to make this podcast happen every 2 weeks. That includes our research assistant and program coordinator, Cyrus Newland, our intern, Claire Hafner, and the entire CSIS External Relations and iLab team.
Until next time.